Welcome into the Nuts. I'm Amal Shaw alongside Mike Palm. Terrific show on tap today. We're going to have Josh Towers join us in about 30 minutes. He's going to be on for a little while. We're going to talk golf. He's an avid golfer, huge Tiger Woods fan, so I know he's disappointed Tiger's not at Augusta. And, of course, we're going to talk baseball with Josh, former big league pitcher. But before we get into all that, Mike, the Masters Golf Tournament going on here. I know you're fired up about this and can't wait to discuss this with you.
Yeah, it's special. It's a great time for us here. Stadium Swim almost sold out for the weekend. We had some early risers in the book here watching the first round coverage here. And, you know, it is. I mean, it's a tradition like no other, as they say. And so as we watch this tournament develop, we'll look for some betting opportunities as we move along, look at maybe some long shots that perform well early, and how the course is playing. Looks like a pretty tough course today with only a few golfers under par.
Well, Mark Leishman would disagree with that. So far through six holes, he's already at minus four. This is going to be a par 72 today, so off to a fast start. He's tied with Hideki Matsuyama and Webb Simpson currently. Matsuyama through 14, Simpson through 13. So these three guys are out of the block quickly. But, you know, overall, it looks like a bunch group so far that we've seen. You've got, just looking at the roster right now, we've got 36 golfers that are even or better so far.
Yeah, you know, typically what you say is you don't want to lose it on the first 2 days, right? You're going to win it on the last 2 days. Matsuyama looks good early, looking at updated odds to lead after the first round. He's your favorite right now at plus 350 with Webb Simpson, plus $6 in second choice.
Anybody you took a futures on?
I did not take any futures in this tournament because I couldn't stay up for that podcast the other day, so I'm going to look to bet later in the round.
Would that podcast have fewer selections than we do at VEASAN? Because I think out of 85 golfers, the entire VEASAN staff's got 90 picks.
Well, they offer a variety of choices. That's yeah, a good thing. Now, as a discerning viewer, you have to see who you're backing.
You know, I just want to make sure. But, you know, no. To me, I think the head-to-head matchups where there's some value personally, when you look at some of them, especially as you get into the later rounds, not just tomorrow, but more importantly on moving day on Saturday, and then as you get to the final 18 on Sunday, I think some of those head-to-heads really offer some opportunities.
Yeah, we were looking at our early results, who we had liability to. It looks like Westwood is our biggest loser here at Circa. A couple other six-figure losers. As it stands now, obviously this will change. Spieth was a popular choice, as well as Berger, Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood, and Webb Simpson, who's doing well early.
Yeah, off to a fast start. You mentioned Webb Simpson already again. Minus four through 13, but Leishman really the one that's one to keep an eye out for. Minus four through six holes, still 12 to go, and already on the top of the leaderboard.
Well, he's certainly pacing well, right? I mean, nobody came out of the gate that strong today.
Yeah, and Jordan Spieth getting ready to tee off right now here at the top of the hour. Obviously, some of the bigger names still yet to go. You see that Spieth is just getting started. We see some of the other guys struggling right now. Freddie Couples, Sergio Garcia, both. Right now it is Garcia at plus four, Freddie Couples plus four as well. So some of the bigger names that you may be used to not getting off to a fast start. I didn't even realize Vijay Singh was still throwing golf clubs out there. He's at plus three.
Yes, and so is Brooks Koepka, plus three right now.
You know, Koepka's got some time, though. I still like his chance. He's through 13. If he can turn this thing around and get to about plus one by the end of the day, I still think he's got a great shot to make a push.
Rory McIlroy plus four. Schauffele even right now. Patrick Reed, two under.
You know, I'm trying to find where... Oh, for my man Brent Musburger, John Rahm, even. I always tell Brent, you can't bet on John Rahm to win a major. This guy's a minor. I mean, that's all he does. He does well at minor tournaments. He can't win majors.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. He picks up a lot of small skins.
Listen, it's a great way to make a living, but in terms of getting a legendary status in the game of golf, you got to be able to perform at this level. Anything you're looking for in particular, whether from the guys today in terms of how they do on the first day, or is it just kind of take a wait-and-see approach and maybe add into some futures? Because you look at some of the current odds right now, Matsuyama to have the leaderboard at the end of the first round is plus 350, but to win the tournament is still plus 14.
Yeah, I will look at how they perform early in day two. I looked in a golf tournament in these majors. I really don't start looking at it till the second day, till they get in through four or five holes to see if they're still staying with the form they had through the first day. And then take a look at in-game what they are to win the tournament. And then on Saturday and Sunday, look at specific matchups once they get past the cut.
Hey, you're absolutely right. Just to give you an update in terms of to win this tournament as it stands currently, Justin Thomas 9-1, DeChambeau 10-1, DJ 11-1, Casey 14-1, Matsuyama 14-1, Rahm 14-1. He must have a relative working at the book. Webb Simpson 14-1, Patrick Cantlay at 20-1. And you've got Reed at 20-1. One more I want to throw in. You mentioned Xander Schauffele right now, 25-1. So just some names to pay attention to. Also an opportunity if you want to bet after the first round. Matsuyama plus 350 and Simpson plus $6. So pay attention to that. You are on the Nuts. I'm Amal Shaw alongside Mike Palm. Terrific show on tap today. We're going to have Josh Towers joining us for about 30 minutes. He's going to talk golf and, of course, Major League Baseball, former big league pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, including the winning a World Series ring with the 2009 New York Yankees. He'll be in studio very shortly. Mike, for people coming in with us right now, want to talk quickly about this golf leaderboard. Anything that you saw today that impressed you, weather a factor? Brooks Koepka off to a little bit of a rough start. As I look at him behind me here, he's at +3. But, you know, Hideki Matsuyama right now, Webb Simpson, and, of course, it is Mark Leishman all at -4.
Keep my eye on Webb Simpson. He's 6-1 to be the leader after the first round, 14-1 right now to win the tournament. He's probably somebody I'm going to look at as possibility to play tomorrow. If he continues to play well, still try to get him at more than 10-1.
Yeah, something to pay attention to here. Some good opportunities. I'm going to give you a quick update right now in terms of after the first round. I love this in-play betting that you can get here. Who has the best score after the first round? Matsuyama +350, Simpson $6. You've got Casey at 7-1, Leishman 12-1, Patrick Reed 16-1, DeChambeau at 20-1, Jordan Spieth 20-1. How about Jordan Spieth? He's just getting started right now. Yep. Might not be a bad look. Obviously, there's some assumption that guys could struggle, but I feel like the afternoon would play much more advantageous than the morning hours.
Typically, it does. And Spieth, I think you see his odds creeping up a little bit from what they were pre-tournament, and maybe this is an opportunity to get in on him at a better price.
Yeah, something definitely to take a look at, because as you see this board, it's going to be constantly changing. There's going to be some great opportunities from an in-game perspective in terms of what you want to bet on. So always something to look at. Especially in golf, it's constantly changing, and really, you're basically a hole away from being able to have a huge impact in terms of winning or losing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the field obviously is bunched right now because the tournament is so early.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's switch topics a little bit. We're going to go from golf, of course, to the NFL draft. This is going to be the big topic of conversation for the next 30 days or so until the NFL has their draft at the end of April here. Want to start with a quarterback that's really rising up draft boards and potentially looking at going #3, Mac Jones. What is your take on Mac Jones?
Well, I agree. I like Mac Jones. Let's look at it. I mean, we're going to assume Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Jacksonville, Obviously, right? #1. So let's clear that out of the way. Then you're really looking at Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, right? That's 2 and 3. And I know Zach Wilson has now become the heavy favorite to land in the #2 slot. I think out of those three quarterbacks, though, I like Mac Jones the best. I think that he's been the most consistent. He's played against the highest level of competition, obviously, in the SEC. His touchdown-interception ratio is terrific. Almost 75% completions. We saw his accuracy both during the regular season and in the semifinals and in the finals against your Ohio State. And I have a preference over him as opposed to Justin Fields, who has accuracy issues, and as opposed to Zach Wilson. I don't think we've seen enough of his body of work against competition.
I hear what you're saying. Let me ask you this question. Okay. If you were to substitute Zach Wilson down in Tuscaloosa and put Mac Jones in Provo,
yes,
do you think there would have been a difference in the season result for the University of Alabama?
That's a great question, Amal. They were so good.
That's my point.
They were so dominant. I think Alabama may still have won a national title. I don't know if BYU is better, though, if they would have had Mac Jones.
I think BYU takes a little bit of a step back because of Wilson's mobility, and I don't think Alabama skips a beat with what Zach Wilson's able to do. When you look at Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, I know he was injured much of the year. Of course, Najee Harris had a tremendous season. He's one of the guys that benefited actually coming back. Now he's going to probably wind up in the first round, if not at least the first 45 picks. Real quickly, give you some numbers on Mac Jones. To be the first pick, he's 100-1. Second pick, 33-1. But to be the third pick, he's -$2 currently. That's something to keep in mind. Odds to be a top five pick, he's -$4. And odds to be a top 10 pick, he's -2,000.
Yeah, I think this third pick, we've seen it move over the last 10 days from where Justin Fields was the favorite to be the third pick of the 49ers. Once pick got traded to the 49ers. Now it's moved all the way to up to $2 on Mac Jones, and I agree with that because of the tradition, the history of the Shanahans wanting that prototypical pocket passer more than a Justin Fields. What they did in Washington, obviously, Daniel Snyder wanted to draft RG3. They went and got Cousins, drafted Cousins, went in the fourth round in the same draft. If it were you, if it was your team, if you were running the 49ers, are you Justin Fields? You Mac Jones? Or are you going somewhere else here?
Well, I'll tell you where I'd give Mac Jones the edge. I'm a big fan of accuracy. That's why, to me, I don't understand. Everyone sits there and says in hindsight, oh, they missed on Brady. I said, no, just go watch the tape of the Alabama-Michigan Orange Bowl.
Incredible game.
Tom Brady was unbelievable. Him and David Terrell put on a show. Remember, it was the missed extra point by Alabama that cost them the game. But to me, when you look at Mac Jones, the one thing that I always thought was when guys were open, he hit them in stride. His accuracy was so critical. Now, I don't think Mac Jones is going to be like an Aaron Rodgers where he's going to necessarily be able to win a game for you by himself or a Tom Brady type. I think he's going to need some support around him. But when you look at the 49ers and the running game they have there, I think they become very dangerous. They've got a solid defense still. They were decimated by injuries last year. I think he's a guy, though, you're probably going to be able to plug in and play a little bit quicker than maybe some of these younger guys. I have some question marks. Even as great as Lawrence has been, I feel like Mac Jones, having been in the system in Alabama for a long time, having been around what basically equates to a pro program, you know, Trevor Lawrence is anointed. He's like that 7-foot guy, right? Like he's a guy that you automatically sit there and say because of size and all these things. You know, Carson Palmer was that guy. Now, Carson Palmer ended up having a great career when he got to Arizona. He was a very solid quarterback, and I'm a Carson Palmer fan. But I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is the slam dunk that everybody's making him out to be. I think that any of these guys could really materialize and become very good long-term.
Obviously, Lawrence had COVID issues this year, as did so many around the country. But I thought his stock, well, he's still going to go number one. His stock may have been higher a year ago, though.
Yeah.
I don't know that he performed at that same level, especially in terms of he turned the ball over more this year. His defense wasn't as good as Clemson, right? Obviously, yeah. And that was their problem. What did Ohio State score on 7 straight possessions, 6 straight touchdown drives in that semifinal game, and ultimately they got behind and couldn't come back. But yeah, I'm high on Mac Jones. I don't think you're going to have the same issue as Tua, where when you go to the pros, your receivers aren't as fast as they were in college, and it shows now, and you're not able to, they don't run themselves open. You have to throw them open, and Tua really wasn't able to do that. He became more of a check down quarterback. I think Mac Jones, because of his accuracy, has the ability to stand back and hit receivers down the field.
It's going to be interesting, right? Like Baker wins a Heisman at Oklahoma, and he's this great quarterback, and the guy behind him, it theoretically could become better in the pros. He wins a Heisman first pick overall as well. But Kyler Murray, for me right now, long-term, is probably a better player than Baker Mayfield, but remains to be seen what happens.
You're right. They're still early in their careers. Yeah. We saw Baker take a step forward this year.
He was great this year in the second half of the season, but what I'm saying is Mac Jones sat behind Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, and now all of a sudden he's got an opportunity to become a better professional quarterback than these two guys.
That's true, and we still don't know who's the better of the first two, right?
Yeah,
I mean, one relieved the other, but we'll see in Philadelphia this year what Hurts can do as the everyday quarterback.
Let's go to a side of the ball we haven't talked about yet, Mike, which is defense. Micah Parsons of Penn State did not play this year, opted out him. Jamar Chase, Penei Sewell, who we're going to get to in just a minute. You look at some big names that opted out. Now, this is a guy that's probably going to be a top 10 pick, linebacker, tremendous edge rusher. I really like him. To me, I'm going back a little bit here, but I think he's probably the best linebacker Penn State has produced since LeVar Arrington was at State College. He's got an opportunity to have an impact, and I know there's some speculation he could wind up at Denver. Going to give you some numbers on him very quickly. Odds to be the third pick, 150-1. In terms of draft position overall, 11.5 over under. It's a pick 'em either way. First linebacker selected at -$4. First non-QB drafted at 20-1. And first defensive player to be drafted at +150. That's the one I like. First defensive player to be drafted at +150. I think there's a great chance him or Patrick Surtain could be the first players off the board. And quickly, his college stats, 191 tackles. Solo was 99, 6.5 sacks and 6 forced fumbles, 6'3", 244.
When you're looking here and you're thinking about is he going to go 10th or 11th, and you look at the draft order, who at the bottom of the top 10? I know you mentioned Denver.
Yeah.
They're still in need of a quarterback, right? I know Vic Fangio, Fanny Pack, Vic is a defensive guy at heart, right? And he will want to tend to draft towards defense, but they still haven't found a quarterback in Denver. The Panthers made the trade for Darnold. Is that the end-all, be-all for them? Are they going to look to bolster their deal? I actually look at the Cowboys here, who are pretty well set at the quarterback position. They've gone out, they've drafted the wide receivers, right? You're going to look for the Cowboys probably to try to build on the defensive side of the ball, and linebacker would be a key spot. I think he may land in Dallas.
You know, there's a lot of things here you look at. You mentioned Dallas, Detroit picking at 7. They need to get better on the edge in terms of rushing. Carolina's got to go offense. They drafted all defense last year. Denver at number 9, to me, makes the most sense when you look at it. Dallas right behind them at 10. So if the Broncos don't end up taking him, I think Dallas would be a pretty good landing spot. And they need some defense. That's the biggest thing. Offensively, I think they're set with Dak coming back healthy. The offensive line will have some question marks. By the way, all this money that Dallas has put into this offense, if they don't have an offensive line that can perform, it won't matter.
It all comes down to that. And you saw as the two offensive linemen went down against the Redskins, the whole season really collapsed. And they were in a position on Thanksgiving Day to really take control of that division and win it. You got two guys go down, it's all over. And the Redskins swoop in and win the division.
Absolutely right. Speaking of offensive line, let's talk about Penei Sewell out of
the football
Oregon.
Team. Let me correct myself. The football team. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. I'm sure somebody will get over there being upset. Penei Sewell out of Oregon, the junior, opted out this year. 6'6", 330 pounds. Odds to be the third pick, 66-1. Draft position for him is over under 6.5, a pick 'em. And to me, when you look at odds to be a top five pick, minus 150. So I want to ask you about a specific team with Penei Sewell. For people that are not familiar with him, left tackle at Oregon, was tremendous in his career. Therefore, the Ducks really had an impact. I think this guy's got an opportunity to come in and be a day one starter. Cincinnati's drafting number five. You have a chance to take Penei Sewell, shore up your left side of the offensive line because Joe Burrow's coming off of an ACL, or you have a chance to get the kid out of LSU, and I call him the kid because he didn't play last year, young guy, and he's, you know, Joe Burrow's guy, Jamar Chase. Do you take him or do you take Penei Sewell?
I take Penei Sewell.
I do, too.
Long-term, you have to protect Burrow. You saw last year how porous their offensive line was. Burrow ends up getting hurt. Burrow is your franchise. You have to focus on protecting him now and build an offensive line for the next 8 to 10 years. That long-term, they want Joe Burrow to take them to be a perennial playoff team and to win that division. I think it's a short-term result to go with Chase. I think the long-term result is to draft offensive linemen, and I think this kid, the Samoan kid from Oregon, is the answer there. I think this is a no-brainer pick for them.
I tend to agree with you. You know, if Joe Burrow were to suffer one more severe injury, you're all of a sudden now in a situation where you're going to lose his and waste his talent.
And you set your franchise back 3, 4, 5 years.
Absolutely. I think this is a no-brainer. I tend to agree with you there in terms of where you're going in this one. I think that's something very important in terms of how you look at this matchup. Mike, quickly, I want to go to the NBA because we're going to get into the Palm Reader's playbook. Tons of golf and baseball still yet to come to. Last night, terrific game in the Valley of the Sun between the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz. Tell you what, man, I got just absolutely crushed between the NBA and hockey last night. Not a good night.
Oh, I'm sorry. That means we'll be them all in today then, I guess.
Hey, listen, we'll talk about that afterwards. Go ahead.
I tease you. This was a good game. Our producer, Jacob, texted us. There's a tremendous game going on in Phoenix. I actually watched most of the second quarter of that game. That's when actually, at the beginning of the second quarter, Phoenix sort of started taking control of that game. But it did have a playoff atmosphere. I mean, we're talking about the team separated by two games for the number one seed in the West, and it's still viable. I mean, the Clippers could still make a run at them, but they're going to rest so many guys during the regular season, they'll probably be content with the three seed. So, I mean, this is a very important game. And I thought it was a terrific game, and both teams played very well. And the game went to overtime, decided by four for the home squad.
Yeah, just getting over the total with the overtime at 117-113. Remember, the Suns were a plus three on the closer here, Mike. Wow, this number got bet up. I didn't realize the guy had gotten that high. I had taken the Jazz and suffered the L on this one. But, you know, to me, when you look at this team, look, first round, Chris Paul, that's probably where it wind up, is getting through the first round. I don't really see these guys still making that deep push. For me, when you look in the postseason, I still have more faith in the two L.A. teams, in Utah, potentially Denver, and even the Portland Trailblazers.
I'm concerned this Utah now. They're really they're having trouble winning on the road now, right? I mean, the splits are so bad. They did not look good in Dallas the other night. They lose this game, and now they have a little bit of a tough spot going home tonight to face a pretty good Trailblazers team.
You know, I can tell you're used to being a Notre Dame fan. You're like the guy on the message board. As soon as John Wooden loses a basketball game, they're like, fire the coach. As soon as Saban loses a game, everybody's fire the coach. This team is 38-13. Come on, man. What more do you want from them?
I'd like them to win a few more road games.
Oh, my God, man. Come on. This team
They're not going to go 16 at home and home during the playoffs, as Pop said.
Yeah, that, I agree with you. At least you do listen to me when I talk. That's fair. But, you know, here's the thing. I get your point. But I still think they're a dangerous basketball team. And when you look at them, they're, to your point, they're 16-11 on the road. They still had a very good season so far. I think they're dangerous, and I think they'll be ready for the postseason.
I'm not denying that. I'm just a little bit concerned about the fact, you know, they went to Miami. They didn't play well. They lose a game in Charlotte. They don't play anywhere close to the level they do at home. This would have been a nice win for them last night and an important game at the top of the West.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, and you make a valid point there, but I still think this team is dangerous. Your potential league MVP, not mine, but Nikola Jokic last night goes for 25-10-9 in that game between the Spurs and Denver. Is he still going to be the MVP, or does Chris Paul finally get some consideration?
He just keeps getting. Now he's 159. I mean, it continues to go and go and go. I mean, I still like Harden. I think Harden at 10-1 is still a bet. He was a great bet at 50-1, 40-1, 30-1, 20-1. And on this board at 10-1, I would still take him.
I think Harden's out of consideration now because he's going to be out for another week or 10 days. Yeah. That has an impact. You missed 4 or 5 games. Now we're coming down to the home stretch here. I think it has a huge factor in terms of how you look at these teams. Want to go to a game tonight that I just mentioned, two teams in the postseason. Back-to-back for Utah, five and a half point favorite in this one, maybe six, depending on where you get the number, against the Portland Trailblazers in this game. Total of 233 here.
Yeah, I would look to the roadside, although it's so hard to bet against Utah at home. But you do have an overtime game on the road and in the back-to-back here. So I'm not going to play this game, but I could only play Portland if I was.
I would agree with you because of the overtime scenario last night, losing that tough game. Remember, this Utah team has been tremendous at home If you're kind of gutsy, you can go with the Jazz money line with somebody and then take Blazers and the points and try and middle it. Jazz at home this year, 22-2. Blazers, though, not bad away from home, 15-10. Want to hit one more game, Mike, with the Phoenix Suns. They're on the road tonight at the Staples Center. They take on the Clippers. They're catching 6 in this one. Suns come in having won 7 in a row, 221 the total here. I think this is a bad spot for them. Emotional big win against Utah at home, and now you got to go on the road.
It's a horrific spot.
Yeah.
If the Clippers won this game by 20, it wouldn't surprise me.
I tend to agree with you. I think it's a good opportunity, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm agreeing with Mike on this one. And the way I've been going this past week in the NBA, you're probably going to want to take the Suns on the money line.
Are they? Is Kawhi playing? Are they all playing tonight,
Paul yeah, that's
George?
Why they,
are they all going to play?
they're going to sit out this weekend. They're going to play tonight, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, that's, I think, something to consider. And by the way, good to see the Boston Celtics getting the win last night with Kemba resting.
They must be off tonight because they're not in the rundown.
That's exactly right. You're absolutely right. But this Boston Celtics team, you know, they continue to struggle, but we'll see what happens. But getting back to this
they're
game.
They're back to 500, though.
Well, they did beat a team that was under 500. Do you get a lot of credit for that?
The win is a win.
That's fair enough. When we come back, we're going to get into the Palm Reader's playbook. I'm just going to tell you up front, I don't have a ton of plays today. I know that doesn't surprise
you. Well, you have a ton, maybe one. I mean, it's always a binary thing with you. Yes, one or no.
I tell you what, hey, listen, I'm still suffering from that hockey loss. 11 goals last night.
I blew every parlay, I bet.
That's right. Can't win them all. When we come back, Palm Reader's playbook. That's next. Welcome back into the Nuts. Mike, let's get into the Palm Reader's playbook. I know neither of us had a successful day yesterday. Let's see if we can bounce back here.
The only thing I won was the behind the bets with Jack Campbell, who moved to 10-0-0.
He's been unbelievable for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You were right. We should have played that game under. That was the low scoring game.
I know. Yeah. I was kind of mad at myself. The Minnesota Wild, 11 goals scored in that game, including 6 power play goals. I don't know what's worse, the fact that you're giving up 6 power play goals combined, or you've gotten into the penalty box that much where these teams have this many opportunities.
Would the price have been that Grubauer gives up 3 in the first? I mean, that just got away from us. I'm going to do a little bit of everything here today, baseball, hockey, and soccer. Let's start with the two-unit plays in baseball today. We talked about when we broke down the American League Central, Amal, that Jose Berrios would be a key player in that division. Would he bounce back from really a poor second half last year? He started the year out as the Twins' ace last year. Really, Maeda was their third starter behind him and Pineda, and Maeda was clearly the ace by the time the end of the year rolled around. Berrios struggled his last 6 or 7 starts. Lights out in Milwaukee, his first start was just dominant. Took a no-hitter into the seventh inning there. There were dueling no-hitters into the seventh inning. He went out, and then the combined no-hitter fell in the eighth inning. They still won that game. Now he comes home today after they've been on the road all year to play a Seattle team who's been at home and now makes their first road game. This game is going to go at 1:10 Pacific, 4:10 Eastern at the Target Field in Minneapolis. We get the ace, really, for Seattle as well, Marco Gonzalez, who had a solid year last year winning 13 games. 2 years ago winning 13 games and then coming back, I believe, with 7 wins, last 6 or 7 last year. So I'm just going to go, instead of laying the 180 with Berrios here, I'm going to go the first 5 under 4.5 in this game with really 2 pitchers that are in form. I'm fading the Boston Bruins tonight. This is the Capitals play for 2 units, minus 115 with Samsonov, just because of their goaltending situation, right? Rask is out. Halak now going to be benched. They're really going with their 3rd and 4th string goaltenders. And so I thought, you know, when I made this number, I made it 135. So I was surprised it was only 115. Washington has played very well this year. And so I laid 115 with the Capitals. What's going to be a 1-unit play for me if it was 125 or 130? I'll make it 2 units at minus 115. Then let's go back to Europa. Europa resumes now. They're down to the final 8.
Do we have an under here?
Yeah, we're going to go under. This should have been my Tottenham team, but Zagreb rallied from 2 goals down.
Dynamo Zagreb.
Dynamo Zagreb, another Croatian miracle, and will haunt Jose Mourinho for the rest of his career how they blew that game. Rallied from 2 goals down and stole this spot in the final 8 from Tottenham. They're going to be at home to game against the defensive-minded Spanish squad, Villarreal. The Yellow Submarine will invade Croatia today. I thought this would be a flat 2. You can find it at 2.5, either minus 145 or 150. So that game's noon here in the West, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. One unit, under 2.5, minus 145, Amal. And now, the moment of truth. Is Amal in or is Amal out?
I'm out. I don't have anything today.
Okay.
A two-game losing streak. I don't force plays. I gotta take a day, come back.
Much going on. First round of the Masters. A nice baseball card. We got the Association in action. Your favorite Europa is back.
There is tennis. I bet WTA, but it went earlier this morning. But also, I told you yesterday, it's Bayern Munich. You take overs. Yeah. But it's okay. You don't listen to me. Don't worry about it.
What about the blizzard? You know,
I would never say a weather thing because I lost on the Miami-Florida State game in a monsoon, which is the highest scoring game in series history.
I was disappointed with Courtois yesterday. I thought he let in 2 weak goals. He may be the best goaltender in the world for Munich. But then now they're in a bad spot. You know, they're down 3. They gave up 3 away goals.
Now
either they have to win by 2 in the return trip in Paris, or they have to win 3-2.
Exactly.
To force extra time.
So, yeah, obviously they're going to have to score 2 goals there. That's one of the things for people that are unfamiliar in these competitions. The away goals have a greater weight than the home goals do. So that's part of the tiebreaker scenario.
I took a shot with the Chelsea under 2. It ended up a push with a late goal. I thought I was going to win that at a plus price. Yeah. Chelsea looked good. Porto had a lot more shots on goal, but Chelsea got the job. You know, Chelsea might weave their way through this bracket too, but I guess the good news was for Man City. I mean, if you have to get PSG instead of Bayern Munich in the finals, I would prefer that a lot. PSG is not the team that they were last year.
I'm sorry, I'm having audio problems. What did you say about Bayern potentially not being there?
They may not. Well, they're missing Lewandowski. I mean, Lewandowski. He's the key to the whole thing.
Wait,
I know you said he didn't make a factor here, but I think he was definitely a factor not being. Lewandowski is there.
I didn't realize.
4-3, they win that game.
Manuel Neuer, who's been considered one of the top 3 goaltenders in the world for a better part of about almost a decade, gives up a bad goal early on.
Horrible goal in the 3rd minute, Neuer.
Okay, and then you're telling me the difference is Lewandowski. This is a team that won last year in the Champions League 1-0. This is a team that, I mean, they've been there with Neuer many, many times.
25 shots on goal, and they only scored 2. But the PSG goaltender outplayed Neuer yesterday.
We'll see if they can get 2 on the road. That's going to be the key. I want to see how PSG decides to defend this one. It's going
they
to be
played
pretty
wide open yesterday.
Absolutely right. They got their 3. They're in great shape. When we come back, Josh Tower's going to join us. We're going to talk some golf.
Masters weekend, no one has better golf coverage than VSiN. Subscribers have access to our full Masters coverage on VSiN.com with current odds, analysis of key golfers, and picks from our experts. Also, watch this week's episode of Long Shots with our golf experts Brady Cannon, Wes Reynolds, and Matt Unions, plus special guest appearance from Scott Van Pelt. It's the first major of the year, and our golf team is already in mid-season form, so make sure you start your VSiN free trial today to keep up with all the action, including daily email updates on betting options for each round, 24/7 video coverage, full access to our coverage on vsin.com, and picks from every one of our experts. Sign up now, vsin.com/subscribe. Welcome back into the Nuts. I'm Mike Palm. He's Amal Shah, and it's Thursday, and our Thursday guest every week. I know you guys are excited. You can mark your calendars. It's going to be former Major League pitcher Josh Towers. We're going to have him for a full 30 minutes today, Josh, since it's the first round of the Masters. I understand you dabble in the golf betting a little bit. We saw you out here studying the action at the Circus Sportsbook. You got any futures here in the Masters?
Well, obviously, I'm high on Jordan Spieth, just the way he's been playing. I mean, I know the last couple of years it hasn't been it, but the way he's came back to this season and then obviously winning last week and showing himself that he can finish. I know it's a popular play, and I think he kicked off in between 12 and 14 to 1 probably for this. But there was a lot of people who are on his buddy Justin Thomas a lot. And so a lot of the matchup plays that I saw, you can still get Jordan at some good prices, or you could before today in the daily pricing. So whenever I saw anything with plus money on him for the day, I just kind of tried to take a little shot at it.
You mentioned that, obviously. Jordan Spieth, the name to keep an eye out for. DJ 9-1 currently on the DraftKings in-play leaderboard to win this thing. What do you think Johnson's chances are considering of what he did last November?
Well, I didn't like his mill, I'll tell you that. His winning mill that he had the other day. So I don't know. Maybe that works for him.
What did he have?
I just thought it would be better. I couldn't tell you the exact menu, but I was like, some people are probably not going to want to eat this. He always has a chance, obviously, winning it last year. He's very good. Daniel Berger, by the way, is another guy that I just think that he got the snub last year, and he should have been in the Masters, and then they didn't play. Well, good for him, and now he's back in it, and he's at 4-1 kicking this off on DraftKings. I think that he's sneaky, and he always seems to come in late. So that's another guy. But, yeah, Dustin Johnson, you don't ever count him out. And these guys that have been around this course and all the different, you know, the levels to the greens, and they just understand what side of the golf course to hit it on a little bit better than others, and it's a slow process, so I think you always have to respect him.
Of the guys, Josh, that have come out of the gate strong here early, playing in the morning, Matsuyama, Simpson, Casey, yeah. Any one of them piquing your interest right now is maybe taking a shot for the future to win this tournament?
Well, Webb Simpson, obviously. I mean, what he did in the past, his putter was, I was watching his putter today, and it was back to being on. And whenever he putts like that, there's a tournament, I think, last year, recently, where he made, like, it was like 56 out of 57 putts inside 10 feet. Wow. I don't even know how that's possible. So if he's doing that, he's dangerous. I always want to see Hideki Matsuyama win. And he's playing well. Obviously, he's the co-leader right now. I always want to see this dude win, but we've seen him stumble in positions in the past, and it actually has set him back. And it's been long enough to hopefully he's past some of those feelings. I personally root for him more than anybody.
You mentioned Matsuyama currently sitting at -4 through 16. He's tied with Webb Simpson, who's also at -4 through 14. Mark Leishman at -4 through 8. On an updated leaderboard right now, though, I mentioned DJ. Jordan Spieth now at 8-1. Remember, he just teed off at 2 o'clock Eastern time, so he's probably just through a couple of holes. DJ is -1 through 14 so far. I'm trying to find Spieth is -1 through 2 holes. So based on that, Mike, he's looking at a -9 today. Let's see if that turns out to be right. I mean, you're a Jordan Spieth guy. This is a guy that struggled for the last couple of years, but he really seems to have found himself a young guy who's had tremendous success. We had Burr on the other day talking about how Jordan Spieth has the lowest scoring average in the history of the Masters.
Yeah, I respect his work ethic. I respect, you know, him as a professional golfer and as a person. I'm not high on Jordan just because he's having a good start to his season. I don't want that to be confused. I'm high on Jordan because he was so good in the past. He was so bad over the past year, so bad. And then he went home, shut everything down, and figured out how to fix it and how to get better. And sometimes when you take something away from somebody or you fail, it makes you better. And he's proved that he went home and put the work in, not only physically, because they could physically do it, but mentally he had to get through some hurdles. That's what's the most impressive part about Jordan Spieth for me. It's not just the fact that he's, you know, coming off a win at Texas.
Josh, is there anybody that you're looking to fade in this year's Masters?
I mean, not that comes to mind. I mean, obviously, you I don't know, it's the Masters. It kind of changes the game a little bit. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, even if you're obviously want to be playing well because there's a sense of freedom inside you and inside your brain where you're just happy. When you get there, it seems to be like even if you're playing bad, some things go out the window a little bit just because of the course itself and the drive up. So there's not anybody in particular. I mean, there's guys that I'm not really going to, you know, jump on. I mean, I see Paul Casey and he's pretty good at 18-1. It's not exciting to me. I would want something a little bit more. I think there's other people. And then some of the young kids, you got to be careful because of the atmosphere. I mean, Shoffley talked about it, how he's 4 years into this now and he's finally got past the point where he doesn't spend all his time on the range the first couple days of practice to where he's burnt out before Thursday. He's talking about now I understand where, like, I force myself to go home and get a break and relax and get ready for the enjoyment of the tournament. And it takes time to get through hurdles like that. So some of these young kids who might come out exciting right out of the gate might fade because of all the energy and the adrenaline that the pre-start to the tournament, you know, gave them. So when you hear something like that from Shoffley, you know, it helps you, at least in our world, you know, kind of understand who we want to take a shot at and who we don't.
Odds makers are high on Justin Thomas. He's at 11-1. Yeah. What do you think about JT's chances?
He's always got a chance, right? Yeah. I mean, I love the guy. And, you know, he mentioned about going and visiting Tiger Woods twice this week, twice last week. He goes when he's back home in Jupiter, he goes as much as he can. And he understands how much this means to Tiger to miss this. And I think that for JT, it's one of those things where he talked about the Freddie Couples when they do the practice rounds and he follows them around. He's like a little kid. And And he is a little kid at heart, but he's also one of the best players in the world. And I think more so for himself, he kind of would like to win this for Tiger.
Yeah, this guy's, he's won a PGA championship back in 2017, 16 yeah. major wins. It'd be a great opportunity. You know, you, I know Josh, a big Tiger fan. I said, I didn't even know if he's going to watch the Masters since right. Tiger wasn't performing.
Heartbroken.
It's hard.
Heartbroken.
It really is hard for me not to see Tiger anywhere on these boards.
I think it's going to be really a great competition. Just from a TV perspective, though, do you think we'll see a little bit of a dip in ratings because the Tiger effect is not in play here?
Oh, man. By default, yeah. I mean, I almost, like, immediately when I woke up, I turned it on, but I almost had that deflating feeling as well, knowing Tiger wasn't there. So, yeah, I can see the overall, but, again, it is the Masters, the biggest tournament always, so it should hold well.
It really will. I just don't feel like there's a certain amount of air that's gone from it, Mike.
There's the depth to an audience that you don't get because he's not there.
There's no question about it. When we come back, we're going to talk a little Big League Baseball. This is a man who knows about pitching, pitched in the big leagues. Also won a World Series ring with the 2009 New York Yankees. By the way, the smaller baseball, it doesn't seem to be having an impact on the run scoring. We're going to get into all of that next when the Nuts continues here on VSiN. With exclusive bets, daily specials, odds boost, and the largest offer of live in-play options, BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live stream of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Michigan, 800-270-7117. In Virginia, 888-532-3500. In Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Welcome back into the show here. We've got Josh Towers, former big league pitcher, joining us in studio. Josh, lots to get to in Major League Baseball. I want to start with the big news, though, out of San Diego.
Yes.
Fernando Tatis going down with a shoulder injury, expected to be out for about a month, maybe a month and a half. How much of an impact does this have on the Padres? Because it's still a very good baseball team.
Yeah. Listen, I've said it once before, and I'll say it again. And I actually think short-term they're better without him.
Elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the first four games he had five errors at shortstop. I think he was hitting a buck 77. There was a swing in about game three-ish where it was a fastball right down the middle, a missed pitch, and he fouled it off, and then he kind of slapped his bat where he was mad. And I, you know, turned to my son, and I was like, what is he mad at? Like, he's the one who missed it. Like, I couldn't have made a worse pitch. His swing is so long. When I go to hit, again, this elbow, my right elbow as a right-hander, has to be somewhere near my body to stay inside the baseball. And when I slow-moed it, he looked like he was like 7-8 inches away from his body, which means he's getting super long and around the wrong way. And as a pitcher, when I see that, like, it just makes it easy for me to get you out. But at the same time, I don't really have to do too much because you're getting yourself out anyways. And so his swing has been like that. It was a very similar swing. And it led up to it. It's not just one thing, but the very similar swing when he went down, actually. It was really, really long. It was a little better pitch, a slider, I think it was, down and away. But his swing is going to – it's like he's trying to hit the ball 700 feet, and the kid doesn't have to. I mean, I referenced to Miguel Cabrera's swing on opening day in the snow off Shane Bieber. It was so short. It was so quick, out in front, opposite way. And that's really what hitting is. And he was getting longer. He can take Miguel Cabrera's swing and hit it all over the place. He doesn't have to. He was an easy out right now for me. And defensively, you can see that it was affected. And so I just felt like I don't want to see anybody get hurt. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this at all. I just felt like right now he wasn't ready to be playing at the big league level. And I know that sounds weird, but you give somebody 22, 21 years old, $330 million, I'm telling you, you're good enough. You're good. You're it. You're the man. And so those little subtle changes he has to want to make within in order to get better. And right now he's the talk of the town. So I just felt like he's more of a liability, with the exception of when he is in the lineup, he still strikes a little bit of fear, so there's protection. And until Kim starts to hit, you know, I'm not as worried, but he's going to put the ball in play. Defensively, he's going to be a little better. And I just felt for the team short term, they're probably better without him.
Let's stay with the Padres.
Yeah.
Keone Kella, I don't know if you got to see him in the seventh the other night. He made Buster Posey look like a Little League player.
He did. I mean,
if this kid is right, and you got Pagan, you got Milan Song, you got Pomeranz, this might be the best bullpen in baseball.
I think the Dodgers bullpen is probably the best bullpen ever.
Except their closer.
I love Kenley Jansen. I think Kenley, as good as he is, he's probably the worst one in the pen nowadays. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they're that good. This Padre bullpen has never got the respect, and they always seem to be very good. And you said it, if Kella can be anything like the shell of his past, which we saw the other night, and he did, he made Buster Posey look like I'm very comfortable and Buster can't really hit. I mean, it was a very impressive at bat. And if he stays like that, he'll be successful, because we've seen it in the past out of this kid.
I want to ask you this question, and it's too simplified of a question, but is Max Scherzer done?
Oh man, I hope not. Listen, I'm high on him. I think that he'll have a good season. When he gave up runs early, all I thought was, it's just a typical day game with Max Scherzer. He always gives up home run in the first inning, so you're going to get runs for sure in a day game with Max, right? So it didn't really bother me. I hope not, man. I mean, I still think there's a lot in there, so I hope he's very successful.
Yeah, I'm a huge Scherzer fan. We'll see if he can bounce back right now. I want to go to the Los Angeles Dodgers, which you referenced. This team has an opportunity. When you look at the talent, you mentioned the bullpen, how good they are offensively. Can this team get to about 105, 107, 8 wins this year? With that weakness in the division as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, those teams, they'll put up a fight, but a lot of teams can't play 9 innings, and the Dodgers can. And then they have the depth later in the season for these guys like David Price and the boys that aren't even back from DL yet, which also have time to get ready. So whoever's hurt, just take your time, because they're so loaded. And again, you might stick around for 5 innings or 4 innings or 6 innings, but it's hard to stick around for 9 innings versus these guys. And with the exception of you know, a late game blown yesterday, they probably would have won that and been 6-1. So I still think that it's going to be hard for them not to win 105 or go over their season total.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about pitchers that may have impressed you through their first start or couple of starts. Derek asked me the other day who I've been most impressed with. I said Sandy Alcantara. I mean, this kid is an ace that you really don't know about playing down there in Miami. He was lights out in the opener against the Rays, pitched great again against the Cardinals. He's tall. He just keeps getting better every year.
Yeah, I've been a fan of him for a while. I mean, watching him on opening day the last couple of years. And in the beginning when he first came up, like, you saw flashes of it like you do with some other people. You saw flashes, and then he would have, like, just a dominant game, and then he would get rocked. And those are the little, you know, inconsistencies that only experience can factor in or fix you. And now we're seeing the consistent Alcantara on a team that also went to the postseason last year, which helped a lot. So, yeah, no, he's definitely one of them. You know, any of those, and I know that, you know, Woodruff's not really a kid anymore, but, you know, him or Burnsy over there, and I don't think they've really got their shine in Milwaukee, because they were relievers for a first bit, and now all of a sudden they're starters, and we're going to see Burns again today after what he did on opening day. So there's a couple kids around baseball. I know Derek's team in Detroit's got a few studs over there too as well. So, I mean, there's a couple of exciting people around this game.
I want to go to a game taking place today between the Twins and the Mariners. Twins hosting at Target Field, which you referenced earlier, Mike. Jose Berríos on the mound going up against Marco Gonzalez in this one. Berríos got off to a terrific start, Josh, going 6 innings, 0 hits, and 12 Ks. Can he bounce back? Because I feel like this guy, I don't know if he's necessarily the elite level number one, but I feel like he is a number one who can really be a difference maker.
Yeah, he's been their number one for a while. Yeah, I think that every time he kind of showed it in the past where he can take that next step, then he kind of, like, you know, plateaued a little bit. And then he comes out on opening day and does that. And again, opening day is one thing, and then the guy pitching against you is doing the same thing. So you guys are both taking perfect games deep in the game. I also was shocked that he was pulled, kind of like I was DeGrom. Like, he's pulled. These are veteran guys who have been doing this for a long time who know how to prepare. So my only fear about this game is I think the Twins are very good. I think Seattle's not very good. But Seattle did have a huge game last night, especially late in one inning versus the White Sox. And any time in the past where there was like a no-hitter or a perfect game thrown, you kind of lose your attention span for the next 5 days because you're doing interviews and talking about it, and it was that good of a game for him. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of, like, setback a little bit, not where he gets rocked, but – and then Marco Gonzalez didn't really pitch very well, and it seems like one of the first two starts, you just kind of get the jitters out. So I don't know. I for some reason, I kind of favor Seattle tonight, which is kind of weird.
Yeah. I played the under in the first five. I just was so impressed with Berríos, and you mentioned Burns. He's a guy that you have value with betting because the market really doesn't know him yet.
Right.
He hasn't put up flashy numbers, but this kid is another kid that could be a breakout star. I want to go back to Scherzer. If a pitcher loses 4 or 5 miles an hour off the fastball, at this stage in his career, is he going to be able to adjust? Is he going to be able to do what Frank Tanana did? Is he even be able, like what Keuchel did? I mean, he had a year of adjusting to losing the velocity, and now he's become that crafty left-hander. Can Max become more of a crafty pitcher if he can only throw the ball at 91?
Yes, for many reasons.
Do you care to share them?
Yeah, you know, I do, but I'm just thinking of the crafty word. Like, I just love the crafty word because I know all pitchers hate that word. Don't call me crafty.
First of all, why can't it be a crafty righty? Why is it only crafty lefty?
That's what I never understood either. Like, all of a sudden, a lefty has to be crafty. I mean, shoot, I threw as slow as any lefty out there, man, and, like, tried to get very crafty. God, I hate that word. We have this ego about us. He knows how to pitch. That's the thing. Like Max Scherzer didn't go out there like a lot of kids we see and just throw the baseball and get by on stuff and hard stuff and break something off and then we're good and he didn't learn anything. Like he learned how to pitch along the years. He also pitches from an arm angle where his movement is he can never throw a baseball straight, which is a very good thing. So he has balls running in two different directions. So even if he backs off of velocity, the thing that Max has to understand is when he does try to jump on it again, he doesn't have that extra jump. So he's got to be willing to pitch the contact more than he had at times where he can get away with stuff in the past. So he has the intelligence, but now if downhill was above the knees, now downhill has to be below the knees. If a changeup was in the strike zone, maybe the changeup's a little bit short of the strike zone. Like he has to be willing to pull back a little bit more at times and not have the, all right, this is where I'd step on it because I don't have that extra step at this point.
If he loses some of that velocity, to Mike's point, does he kind of negate some of the calls he might have gotten from a home plate umpire because of reputation, because of being Max Scherzer?
I would hope not, being who he is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's one umpire that would probably do that to him. But, no, I would hope not with that. With that said, he also needs to go back to that changeup a little bit more. Because hitters, they want to go, go, go. They don't like, you know, they don't like to get out in front and they don't like anything slow and then they complain. So maybe back off of the slide a little bit more, maybe go to the curveball and the changeup a little bit more often and then just trust his sinker. Like I would even, I'd probably throw that sinker a little more than I would even his four seamer.
Any thoughts on your young prediction? You, Darvish, here. A little bit of a rough start. Blew the lead in the opener. Was better against the Giants in the second start.
Except he's giving up these solo homers to these lefties right down the middle. I got to watch him in that game, and that was obviously a four-seamer down the middle, I think, to Crawford that he gave up the bomb on. I got excited watching him pitch because everything was going, again, like Scherzer in two different directions, and he was cutting it and then sinking it, and then it was like a masterpiece watching him pitch.
He's a crafty right-hander.
He's a crafty right-hander who throws about 94.
You know who I thought was a crafty right-hander towards it? Rick Rushel. I thought became a crafty pitcher later in his career as a right-hander.
That's a good point, too, because right? If there is anybody crafty in the game, it's probably you, Darvish.
Yeah.
Or the now the righty closing for Baltimore with 18 changeups he throws.
Your guy Johnny Means okay. Yeah, he's hanging in there carrying the team.
It's going to get frustrating for him soon. But
by the way, the Boston Red Sox, look, they're in serious trouble potentially getting swept there by Baltimore, bouncing back here the last couple of days. Though.
Might be a good bet today also on them.
Take a look at the Boston Red Sox here today later on as they go. That's going to do it for us here on The Nuts. I want to thank Josh Towers, who's just going to join us every Thursday in studio. And I think he'll be more forthcoming with information next time, Mike. I do like that he's at least willing to share.
I love it. I love to have him 30 minutes every Thursday.
Absolutely right. Betting Across America is next here on VSiN.